I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet.
I'm Mrs. Brittenden, and I've been running or in charge of PSH for a matter of a few years now. Last year, I was head of year for these guys as well, so it was quite interesting seeing it from both sides, the pastoral side and also the academic side. And I am passionate about maths. I love maths, and everybody can achieve in maths, no matter what level. I think that's really important. I think it's really important for parents as well to get away from saying, you know, of course I was never good at maths. So I think it kind of, it perpetuates the feeling that it's okay not to be good at maths. And when people say that to me, I often say to them, well, you wouldn't tell me you couldn't read. And I think as a society, we need to kind of try and get away from that as well. So I did hear one of the announcers on the BBC recently slander maths when I wrote to the BBC, because I thought, actually, we could do without that, you know, do that across the nation. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Brilliant. Okay, let's start with the really sort of cogent idea. If you wanted these lovely people who have given up their time to leave with one vital piece of information, the biggest misconception, the biggest thing that they can do to help in maths, what would it be?
Just encourage practice. Maths is all about practice. Practice, practice, practice. And little and often, even if it was, I mean, obviously I'd hope it was more than this, but even if it was 10 minutes a day, and just doing a few short things for 10 minutes, that is better than nothing. And actually, practicing exam-style questions, if you can encourage them to do that, I don't know what these guys find, but once you've seen one question several times, it's the same question time and time and time again, just with different numbers. And it's that kind of familiarity which actually helps you with resilience in the exams. You've got three papers, well, the kids have got three papers to sit, and stamina, three lots of 1.5 hour maths papers is quite a lot. And I think there's something really important to be said for having that familiarity. So if you can encourage just practice, 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 exam solve questions, past papers, I'm sure these guys would probably agree, a lot of past papers. Also, if you can encourage them to use, yes, it's great for them to use the mark schemes, but obviously they're a little bit tricky to understand sometimes. And for, like these guys have already mentioned about the exams being going through on YouTube or whatever, there are 9 times out of 10 their exam solutions, like handwritten solutions, which are much easier to understand and follow. And also, if you've got a question wrong, then you know you can actually track back and find out where you've gone wrong. So that would be one of the main things that I would suggest.
And so practicing sort of 10-minute intervals with topics that they know they're weaker at.
Yeah, yeah. And just past papers as a whole. And sometimes I think if you know how to do a question very clearly, skip over it, come back to it, and try and aim for the ones that you're not 100% sure on. Definitely.
That speaks to another question I was going to ask you, because we've had some sort of very heated debate between Dr. Green and Mrs. Underwood about the order in which we tackle exams. So one is a purist and one is a slightly less. I bet you can guess which one's which. What would you say in maths? Is it important to start at the beginning? Because I know it works in a very sort of buildable way.
Yes. I think it depends on the individual, actually. That's a bit of an airy-fairy way of putting it. But there's a huge number of topics covered in maths, and it is a spiral curriculum, really. So it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you've always got to build on the basics.
Are you able to explain what a spiral curriculum is?
Yeah, so you keep revisiting things, but maybe in greater depth each time you revisit it. So obviously you do fractions, adding, subtracting fractions, which eventually might build up to adding and subtracting algebraic fractions with a number in the denominator, which would then build up to having algebra in the denominator. It's the same topic, but it's just revisited and going into greater and greater depth. So in terms of prioritising revision and what you would like to tackle, the students all had from their first set of PPEs a gap analysis sheet that they fill in according to what they did in their papers, and we'll have exactly the same thing following this PPE as well. And I normally suggest that you maybe, it's a bit old-fashioned, but red, amber, green, your topics. And I would suggest starting with your amber topics, because they're topics, when you've done your paper, they're probably things you might have made a silly mistake on, but they're kind of easy wins or quick fixes, whereas your red topics maybe come back to a little bit later. There's no point, I don't think, in trying a red topic and, you know, failing and finding it really hard when actually you could get a bit of a feel-good feeling for finalising those amber topics.
So do they have this gap analysis now?
They've got their one from their first set of PPEs. Mm. So that was specific to that paper. They will have one specific to
and
the next lot.
When they get it.
They colour code it themselves. Yeah, so they colour code it. We give them all the topics and then they colour code it. They go through their papers with a fine tooth comb, as it were, and do it. They also have tracking sheets, which should have been given out or gone through last week with them, which tracks all of their previous tests. And they will have written down, you know, trigonometry, I struggled with using tan, whatever it was. And hopefully they will now take that away and really focus on those areas. So it's all dependent on the individual. There's no right way of doing it. What I would suggest in terms of actually doing the papers and revising papers, if you're somebody who's already on a grade 7, you know, start halfway or something and tackle those harder questions. If you're aiming for a 7, then you need to really make sure the first, it sounds old-fashioned, the first half of the paper is really solid. So it's going to be dependent on you as a person, I would suggest.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, putting you on the spot, because this wasn't actually a question that we discussed. So obviously, you know, these parents are here today because they want to help support their young person. So say, for instance, they're, I don't know, in the car or doing something where a past paper is not readily accessible. Is there anything that they could do or listen to or access that might be helpful in maths? It's okay to say no, but we'll get back to you.
I don't know. Have you guys got any ideas? I don't think they're, you it's can't, not the it's not, it's not a discussion subject,
yeah.
really, is
like
it?
Like, you sort of need to be able to write things down.
Yeah, I agree. And for this year, I would say you could sit in the car and practice learning formulae, but this year they're going to get given formulae, like you guys did. So it's a different scenario. It's not a discussion topic. You need to be sitting there writing and doing stuff, won't you, really?
What about practice?
Yeah.
Just writing down.
Yeah.
Questions.
So from your point of view, I think the best thing you guys can be doing is asking the question, have you done some maths today? What have you done today? It's that getting into a conversation with young people about what they're actually doing and what they found hard, what are you going to do about it? That sort of thing I think is important.
Mm-hmm. We've spoken about YouTube resources. Are there any other resources? It's really sort of a question for you guys as well, if I'm honest. Are there any other really good maths resources that you would recommend to these parents?
Absolutely, Corbett Maths, very, very, very good. They have a 5 a day.
Yeah, that's brilliant, actually, isn't it?
Which is basically sort of 5 questions. They've got sort of a few sort of difficulty levels, and you just, you know, it takes sort of 10 minutes each day, and you just go through, you do the questions, and you'll notice, like Miss said, that, you know, the same sorts of questions sort of come around. And it can also, like, you know, it can kind of make you return to a topic without you even really sort of meaning to, so it's, you know, so that you can then sort of strengthen on that. And also for practicing, you know, a specific topic, if you want to practice, you know, volumes and, you know, surface areas, you can go on Corbett Maths, the website, and find videos on it and find questions, practice to do. And I would say that I used that and that was really, really good.
And actually, to add to Laurie there, actually, I've got on the higher tier and the foundation tier, both Google Classrooms, there's a document called Converting Up One Grade. And if you're on a grade 5 and you want a grade 6, you can go onto that, particularly if you access your, look back at your tracking sheet as well. If you, in transformations, if you only got a grade 5, go onto that. There's a section on transformations for converting a 5 to a 6 for transformations, for example. And what we've done is go through the Corbett math stuff, like you're talking about, and suggested, you know, don't worry about these questions, do question 5 and 6, and that will help give you a boost in that topic as well. So that links back to your Corbett, and most of them are Corbett links, because they are fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really good.
There's also Physics and Maths Tutor, I'm sure you've heard of that.
Yeah.
That's just, that also splits all your topics. You find all the past papers on there. That's more later towards the exams. But for now, it splits every topic. You find questions from previous exams.
Yeah.
And using that. So using your colour-coded, you just go, oh, I'm bad then. Like, wait, what's a maths topic? Algebra. And you just go in there and do all the questions. And, yeah, that's good.
Whilst we're on the subject of sort of revision outside of the classroom, could you do the Glamis assistant job with the book that you bought in?
This is just my friends used it and I'll use it too. It's just that. But you can buy it. Can you still buy it from us?
Yeah, hopefully. People will have already bought them.
Yes.
They were.
Your children's
were Yeah.
That's quite useful. It's just 9 to 1 to 9.
We can leave it on the back. Yeah, you can have a flick through it. Perfect. So if a child comes up against something that they just don't know what to do, either in revision with their parents or in class with you guys, what do they need to do about that?
I would suggest, in the first instance, contact their teacher, either come and see their teacher or, you know, during half term, we do, most of us still look at our emails and stuff and, you know, I've sent answers back, photos, send it back via an email, if, you know, if somebody's desperate. But otherwise, definitely, first instance, their teacher. Secondly, obviously, like these guys are saying, they can always Google the world is there, isn't it, via Google. Google, you know, how do I answer this? But also, there is, on a Thursday lunchtime, up in Mass, we have a Mass Help Club, which anybody can come along to get help with whatever they need. Like we're saying, if you struggle at one topic, come along and say, I struggle with this, and do that. But again, there's the Converting Up One Grade documents. It's literally all there for them. You know, I'm struggling with this. Here's the video. Watch the video. Have a go at these questions. Here's the answers. And if they're still struggling, perhaps come along to the lunchtime. But we're all more than happy to help any maths teacher up in the maths department. You can ask any one of us.
Are you running the sessions like the English department in the half term?
We won't be doing any in half term, no. But we will start doing after schools, after half term. Probably, I don't know what day yet. After school, after half term, and then there will be after school after Easter as well.
One thing that struck me, because I don't know whether you guys are aware, but something that we also run, I don't think any of your children are directly involved in this at the moment, but we run a sort of a buddy system for students that are currently struggling in a particular subject, paired up with someone from year 12 that was in the same position as them last year, and we have some mathematicians in, as part of that. And one of them didn't turn up the other day, so I sat down and I got some foundation maths help, because I'm really good at maths. I'm really good at maths, and I'm really trying hard to go. And what struck me is actually the importance of reading, because even myself, who's sort of inured to these sort of things, I got quite a bit wrong, not because I didn't know the sort of the maths functionality, but because the reading was something that tripped me up. How common would you say that is in maths exams?
Definitely. And so I don't know if you guys noticed last year, there were highlighters on your desks in the exams.
Yeah.
Okay, because we really need them, the students, to be actually picking out keywords. I think they get really bogged down with, oh my goodness, I don't know how to answer the question. And actually, it's one of the only kind of things, probably, that people would say, I don't suggest you read the question three times first. Actually, I suggest you highlight the keywords as you go, because if you're of the ilk that you're going to maybe find it a little bit overpowering anyway, by the time you've got to the end of the question, if you start going back, your mind is already thinking, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. And actually, if you pick out key information and draw sketches or whatever as you go through, I don't know about you, but I think that's really helpful.
I remember
really
doing underlining in the exam.
Yeah.
It's like key numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Key words.
And I would say that. Sorry, Lee.
Always try and check the box. Especially more wordy questions than a red herring.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot.
Well, I just read through the question kind of kept slowly, not reading it fast.
Yeah. And I would say I'm a marker as well, and the students who tend to get the more wordy questions wrong, I mean, none of them have done any underlining or anything. And I can totally appreciate, there's a lot of words there and you've got to pull information out. So, again, exam practice, isn't it, that's going to help you do that, definitely.
Yeah.
Coming back to what you just said about red herrings, is it something that you would talk to the kids about? So are there always red herrings in those longer wordy questions, in your view?
No, not always. No. Sometimes there will be a few things, or information that, do we actually care that person's called Jim? No. You know, people get bogged down with this kind of information, and it's not really relevant to the question, which is why we try and pick things out. I know you're saying about red herrings. There are very few red herrings across three papers. Very, very few. Just so
small.
Brilliant. Okay, so you talked a little bit about at the beginning about stamina. Now, obviously, the highlighters are going to remove some of that cognitive load with those longer mark questions. Is there anything else apart from sort of practicing, or are there any other tips and tricks that you can think of that might be useful to get to the end of these papers essentially in the time available?
I mean, I would suggest that if they get stuck on something, move on. Just move on, come back to it, because the papers, yes, they do get progressively harder, definitely, but there will also be questions that don't require reading and that just require a process later on in the paper. I don't know if you guys would agree. You know, things like we do show that this decimal is this as a fraction. It is the same process every single time, but it might appear at question 20 whereas you might have had some really chunky, wordy ones before that. So if you get stuck, just move on, pick up marks elsewhere and come back to it.
Yeah, I mean, I did a thing in the exam of if I read a question and I started trying to do it and I just couldn't work out what to do, I would, like, put a little star symbol on it and I would go and I would carry on. And then once I'd done all the questions I could do, I then started going back through the exam paper, doing the questions I failed to do beforehand.
Yeah.
And just, like, trying to work out, okay, and, like, getting a bit more. And, you know, on some of them, I never managed to get an answer.
Yeah.
But on others, I picked up a few more marks, and I even got, like, the right answer.
But actually, I think that's an important point there, Laurie, about you saying about that you didn't necessarily get the answer.
Yeah.
So few marks across a paper are actually for the answer. So on the mark scheme, it's an A mark. It's for accuracy, it's not for answer. And I think that's a really common misconception. All I ever want students to do is show they're working. Even on a calculator paper, please write down what you're typing into your calculator, because we've all pressed a 2 instead of a 4 on your phone or whatever when you're dialing a phone number. It's the same thing. And if you haven't written it down, you start not getting marks. So on a 5-mark question, there's 4 of those marks are for method. Only one of them is for the actual accuracy at the end. And I think it's really important to make sure you're showing all of your method.
That speaks to sort of a wider thing that I think it might be useful to talk about the fact that we think a level 9, I think we're sort of hardwired to think a level 9 or an A star in old money is 100% accurate, you know. And I think it's really useful for us to say actually that you can afford across all the 3 subjects that you've attended to sacrifice marks. And the real issue that we have is when students go, I can't do this one. And now I'm going to crumble because I can't do it, okay? And I think what's really important, and a really important narrative for all of us to adhere to, I don't know whether you guys would agree, maybe you do, disagree, excuse me, is that the pass mark, so a level 9 in English last year for English literature was 87%. Now that is high, but that's not 100% of the marks. You can afford to drop marks if you want to. What's a level 9 in math? I mean, sorry.
About 80 something, 78,
80. Last year, because I think 202 out of 240 was...
Yeah.
I think science is 75%.
And this is the thing, if you're aiming for a level 9, now that's not what success looks like to all of our young people. Success could be a level 6, and that's amazing, and a level 6 for English would be significantly lower than that.
Well, so a 7 in maths is only about 63-65%, which is doable for a lot of our students, like a lot of our students, I think.
To resilience then? Is that what it is? Because what is stopping students from getting to that 7? Is it the fact that we haven't been accurate enough in our messaging to them, that they can afford to go, actually, no thank you today. No thank you, I'm not going to do that one at all, and I'm going to hold it together and all the anxiety. And,
I think,
you know,
some of the students who don't get the 7, who then think they should have got the 7, when they go through, there's a lot of silly mistakes. So that is another thing. If you get to the end of the paper and you think, do you know, I really can't do any more of this, I would much prefer, rather than you sitting there, much prefer to the students to say, actually, I'm going to go back through and reread every question like I've never seen it before. Because the amount of students that might do a misread, and as a marker, we can award marks for misread, but we can't award the accuracy mark. So, you know, if you've misread a 12 as a 14, you're not going to lose method marks for that at all. But if you've done that a couple of times across 3 papers and you're only just a few marks short of the next grade boundary up, they're silly marks that have been lost, which is nothing to do with your ability at all. It's just that perhaps you've read it too quickly and you haven't gone back and checked. So I would say, you know, that is important. Go back and reread every question as if you've never seen it before.
And I think it was Dr. Green that said it in the science meeting. He's like, always be like a detective, knowing it 100%. Try and find that mistake. Like, everyone's got quite several in them. So, like, try and find it. Mm. So it's going to be there. So
that's a really good point.
Find it in your own.
I like that. Try and be a detective. That's great.
Are the students taught these questions in class?
We do bang on about it quite a lot. It's whether people do it. I think it's exam pressure, isn't it? And that's why I think it's really important for us to have a couple of sets of PPEs to really try and get you into the right frame of mind, but also remind you of the kind of things that we need to be building towards for the final thing.
We always say PPEs are an opportunity to muck something up, and actually it's not a bad thing. If you make a big mistake in a PPE, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, because you will not make that mistake again. You'll remember that feeling and won't do that again. Speaking to that, I wonder whether I could open it up to you guys. I know it's a bit before your time, talking a little bit about that exam anxiety, because I think, again, speaking to what you said at the beginning about cultural sort of perceptions, I think students anecdotally see science and math as sort of more high pressure subjects than potentially English, potentially because they're easier, but because you get less.
It's a sort of different form of kind of having to. It works in a different way. You're not sort of saying lots of. Well, with the greatest respect.
Lots of flowery things about
something.
You're not using
flowery language and kind of having to be important in the style. Mm. It's a bit more of a kind of concrete, you know, there is a right answer in a maths question. There isn't in English. In English, it's more about how you justify it, whereas that's less so with maths and science.
So how do you manage that anxiety? How do you manage, I mean, to be honest, I'd even really like to hear what you did on the morning of those exams. You know, what was it about those particular exams, because you all seem to be agreeing with me that this was a high pressure environment. How do you manage that sort of pressure moving towards the exams, and then what do you do immediately before the exams to make sure that you're in the right mental space? I mean, Megan or Ed, or I mean, we've got lots of different voices here.
I'm happy to chip in a little bit. I mean, personally, I really like the interpretation stuff for English. Maths is definitely not my forte, but I think the most important thing I did was realising the morning of or the night before that there's not a lot that you can actually do in that moment. So not piling on the pressure, thinking I should be doing something, I should be doing this last minute stuff. And one of the things I found the hardest is lots of people, when you get to the heart area and things before the exams, will be doing questions or be testing each other. I actually find that to be counterproductive. So I'm sat there stressing out as if they're now absorbing more information than I have. I don't think that's actually true. I don't think you're retaining the information that you're trying to absorb in that time. So just trying to stay calm, really.
And the people that test themselves panic themselves too.
Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, yeah, because, you know, you've got 10 minutes, you're not going to learn anything much more. And even if you do sort of take it in, when you're sort of seeing a question like that in an hour, this time, you're not going to remember that, most likely.
And you just get really panicked.
Yeah, that is like, so like, interesting.
Like, the best thing to do is to just sit around and just try and relax.
Avoid people too.
I'm going to be completely honest with you, parents. This is not a comfortable position for me to be in. This is not what we do here.
I mean, I don't think you have to avoid people. You know, if you want, you can just sort of sit around and talk with your friends. Just don't really think about the exam.
People also don't like it.
Okay.
Yeah. Just
this is really interesting.
If you want to do if you want to do an extra sort of few maths questions and have a look over some notes, that's fine. But if you don't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it depends how much you've done the day before. Like, if you've done nothing and then you test yourself and then that's going to stress you out. But if you have done a lot of revision, that yourself could calm you down if you do well by revision, right? So it varies.
Either swings in both ways.
Yeah.
Either you know it or I'm so confident. Or it just freaks you out.
I suppose it comes down to knowing your young people, I suppose, doesn't it? You know, you can read them a lot better than we can, you know. But this is challenging for me. I quite like this. I'm going to go away and think about this, because we do tend to do these sort of revision sessions in the morning, and we do say that.
Well, that works. Is this when you get donuts and bananas?
That one was sort of led by a teacher who knows what you're talking about.
Right.
And actually having an adult there who's like, you know, sort of saying, this is what's going on, this is what's going to happen, is actually more helpful than just sort of having some other nervous babbling.
Are you being honest, though? Because be honest, because we're led by you. You're our customers. If it's not working, do you think that sort of thing does work?
I enjoyed when there's a teacher. And I enjoyed the donuts and bananas. And that was good, because you can go into sections where you weren't even confident and you could just get that last minute from a teacher.
Whereas people holding
their textbooks going, do you know this?
That's
not as helpful.
Yeah, because the teacher isn't in the exam as well.
Sorry, what is the donuts and bananas?
It's not something, to be fair, it could be rolled out. When I was head of English last year, I did a little bit of research about sort of psychology. I think they do it in the core subject. So essentially, and also we're taking care of the students that may not have had the money or the time to have breakfast in that morning before their very important GCSE. So they come in and we set them into lots of different rooms, which we will do again this year because it worked really well for us, and I'm sure it did for you too. And so students can basically choose what they want to do. So they can either, as you say, go to the heart and chill, they can have sort of a very specific, this is the questions that you're going to be facing in this exam. So again, it's not really about content, it's about, okay, so I know what I'm going to, when I open this page, this is what it's going to be like. So that, I think that's helpful. Or we had this other section where it was a completely silent writing section, because the thing about English is obviously students don't write enough. So we said, right, you've got 12 minutes, I want you to write a page of something in 12 minutes. And that was really useful for us, but I'm sure...
Yeah, in maths, we obviously did it slightly differently because maths doesn't work like that. We don't know what's going to be on what paper at any given time. And we can take a pretty good guess after paper one as to the kinds of things that then aren't going to be tested again, but there's three papers. So we tend to, what we did was we had, if you're aiming for a grade 7, because by this point, pretty much people know what they're really trying to aim for. If you're aiming for a 7, go into this room. If you're aiming for a 6, go into this room. If you're aiming for an 8 or a 9, or I think if you were aiming for an 8 or 9, you could be in the plaza and then Mrs. Gadd was there to help and that sort of thing. So it was then about, right, if you're aiming for a 6, you need to definitely be able to do this style of question. We're going to do one of these, you do one. Right, let's do one of this, you do one of this, you do one. Which I think did give some help, actually. And I know in the past, it was purely luck, I say purely luck. One of the foundation students said to me, oh, miss, if there's anything that you needed to say, I said, if sign 30's there, it's a half. And it came up, and it was one mark, but you never know, that might have just carried him into the 5. So, yeah, I think you're right, like, about maybe testing each other's a bit panic. Because also, what I might want to test you on might not be what you need, and then it makes you feel a bit panicky. And everybody's aiming for something slightly different, probably. I mean, obviously, we all want to achieve really, really highly, but actually, as individuals, our young people will know what kind of grade they need to be aiming for next, and then aiming for at the next stage, and that's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
Controversially, what was the biggest waste of time, looking back on it, in your maths revision? What did you do, and looking back on it, when that had really no impact on anything? You look like you have an answer.
Right, this is only when I've started out, because it's about to sound very controversial, but initially, when I was starting out with my maths revision past papers, because for me personally, I look at those questions and I think, I don't know how to approach this. So then I panic myself about it, I'm overthinking, and then it's not getting done. Mm-hmm. So I think just trying to identify the areas that you're struggling with and then looking at tutorials on YouTube. I used a YouTube channel called Cognito, I think. Sorry, I got a bit choked out there. And then just looking at someone work through the question. And if you're impatient like me, you can put it on 2x speed and then they're whizzing by.
Me too.
That's what I would do. And then finding questions online on like Corbett Maths or Maths Genie, websites like that, and working through that way.
So breaking down those past papers into sort of mentally more digestible chunks.
Yeah, and then once you've got those sort of skills down, then you can start doing past papers. But if you initially put that much pressure on yourself, I find that to be...
I think Megan's right up there, definitely. And that's why we don't do a lot of past papers until like this sort of time in the year, because in maths there is no point in having done past papers in year 10 or at the beginning of year 11, because you just don't have enough content. The maths syllabus is absolutely massive, and actually if you don't have the skills, and like I was saying earlier about coming back and revisiting, if you are suddenly presented with a question from tier 10 but you haven't learnt 6, 7, 8, 9, you're not going to be able to do it, and it you're right, it will stress you out because you won't know how to tackle it.
That was a big mistake I found early, was I thought past papers were the best.
Yeah.
And I almost wasted them.
Yeah.
Because you've got a limited amount.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
You've got a limited amount, and that doesn't end in with confidence.
Yeah, and it's not.
And so because you just haven't learned it. So there's no way you would be able to know. And then that's why you need to do your 30 minutes, 10 minutes. This is 10 minutes revision, 20 minutes.
You've been
here
before.
I know.
Absolutely.
Script. Yeah.
There was no script. There is no script. Definitely, as you can possibly tell.
You said there are three papers. Can you just identify what the differences are?
So paper one is a non-calculator paper.
Could you share the dates as well?
It is. I'll write it down. And I didn't bring it with me. 16th of May is paper one. I did write it down, it's there. 16th of May is paper one, and then paper two and three are both calculator papers, and they are the 3rd of June and the 10th of June. And like, luckily or unluckily, they're all in the morning this year.
That's good.
I prefer that, I think that's the best way. 3rd and 10th of June.
You're sort of more awake.
Yeah, I think.
Because you get tired after having done an exam.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Afternoons more time to stress you out as well.
Yeah.
Further maths, I have not written those down. I'm not going to lie.
June, aren't they?
Yeah, they are afterwards. Later. Yeah.
Maths is normally the last ones, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Six days on next one.
And just all of the things that we spoke about earlier, Corbett maths, converting grades, does that apply to further maths?
There is. There's a whole separate classroom for further maths. Is anybody else's children doing further maths? Anyway, there's a whole. Yeah, they do have a section on further maths, and
I used that. That was good.
Yeah.
I like to say it.
Yeah. And
I feel like maths.
Is it maths
used up there? Right, do they? Yeah. But there is a lot of revision resources on the further maths Google Classroom as well.
I mean, also I found that like with further maths, it was not as easy to look on the internet for sort of video help. So I would say just go and ask a teacher. Sort of more readily with further maths because like searching on the internet and like sort of taking longer for something that's more difficult, it's not worth it.
And actually, if your algebra skills, I would say if your algebra skills and your shape skills are like at a grade 8-9 on that using the converting up one, there is so much crossover there, isn't there? So I think that would be a main thing. And then there's a few topics which are obviously separate, which are covered on Corbett Maths, aren't they?
I found in further maths it's quite easy to identify stuff you're bad at.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you don't do it in the other course. So I just focus on that. So matrices, I hate the math.
Oh, God, I love matrices.
That didn't work with me, so I practice that. But yeah, it's the same thing in every subject, identifying weaknesses.
Yeah.
And just practice.
And actually in further maths there's so little that's extra.
Yeah.
It's easy to revise the extra stuff, I think.
Is it possible to revise maths with friends?
Yes.
Young people?
Yeah.
Yes.
Expand on
that. I think yes, because you can almost work as a team.
How would that look? So, like, how would that practically, logistically look on a,
on a piece of paper?
Yeah.
So you can almost, like, share steps. So I do step one, and then a friend would do the next step. And if you don't think that's what he should have done, or vice versa, you can discuss what you should do.
So it has to be someone of a similar
level
ability to you.
Or
it doesn't have to be.
No.
It's a nice thing, if you teach somebody something, you retain more information.
It's on a...
Well done, Lou. We've only paid attention in the last part. Yeah, you can retain something like up to 90% of the information if you teach other people. I mean, I don't know about you, as a teacher, I probably wouldn't remember half the things I do if I was not doing it every single day. So I think that is a really important thing. And actually, I know it's good similar level, because then you can kind of like rally coach each other. But if you do have a friend who's maybe not as good as you, I don't think there's any harm.
Or better,
it helps each of you kind of solidify that knowledge. Definitely.
I would say don't be in a big group, though. Like,
one-on-one, two.
Two is, like, a good number. If you have sort of more than that, you just get sort of... people just start having a conversation. It's sort of what happens.
My mum, I taught her maths.
That's a good
just
idea.
Explain.
Yeah.
She'd go, well, what do you do in maths? And at the time, it was really annoying. But it's actually good.
That's good.
That might help with the people hating maths as well.
Exactly.
Love it, Lou.
Yeah.
Megan, what were you going to say?
Well, my mum's a bit of a math hater, actually.
To sort that out, Megan, come on.
But I think I'll use me and my friend Amelia as an example, because I'm not going to call her a certified genius, but
she's pretty close.
People well know she's very, very good, and she's definitely got a higher level of maths than I have. So we used to sit down, and she used to teach me how to go through and do things, and I found that very helpful, but also for her, that did, it solidified it. So if she knew how to do those things... just off the top of my head, so it was helpful. But
and actually confidence for her as well, building in really knowing I know how to do something,
I did a sort of similar thing with a friend of mine who went to Chatham. I mean, we did a bit of biology and a bit of sort of other subjects as well, but it was like going through questions sort of together, and also like sort of testing each other a bit.
Mm.
I mean, I would say less for maths, more just like going through questions together with maths was good.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Miss, is there anything else you'd like to share before we move on to the final section?
I'm just going to reiterate maths is all about practice, and really, if we can try and build that positivity around it.
Yeah.
Definitely, and because I think there's so much negativity surrounding maths in our society that if it's true, I think. I think a lot of people are really negative about it. But everybody can achieve something. It doesn't matter what level you are. Even, you know, if you're a grade 3, you're still achieving something. If you're a grade 9, you're achieving something really, you know, you're doing a lot. But I think everybody can achieve something. And I've taught quite a lot of lower sets, and a lot of them often love maths. They love their maths lessons, which, it feels like it wouldn't be that way around, because so long as you always make it something that you can achieve, we all like to feel like that. So I think that's really important. Just be positive about it, and don't let them say, oh, I'm not very good at maths, you know. Okay, so that'd be the main thing.
Well, it's also that sort of things are changing, and maths is sort of becoming more of an important thing to have as a qualification.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So you can't afford to just sort of say, I hate maths, I don't want to do it.
Every job uses maths. Every single job uses maths. Everyone's probably around the table have used a spreadsheet at some point, and, even my husband, who works in the wine industry, he came home the other day and thought, oh, I had to use circumference the other day. I'm like, great, yeah. But, you know, he works as a production manager. You would never think that you would have to use maths. Everybody uses maths everywhere. So, you know, I think that's really important.
Thank you. So I would like to pass over to you guys, maybe Megan, if you wouldn't mind taking the lead on it. I know we've probably covered lots so far, so if you don't need to sort of tread over old ground, but if there's anything specifically that you think is important from your point of view, you've done this a lot more recently than us.
I think it's less of the specifics and more of the attitude. So I tend to be relatively pessimistic just as a person, and I've been trying to work on that. But just going into maths and my exams and things, trying to have more optimism, and also, as much as I have slated revising in the morning, that's not in reference to the session. So I found the English one really helpful, and I also found the maths one really helpful. I know I was actually in your one.
Yeah.
And just having that opportunity to recap some of the questions, I actually feel like I did pick up more marks, because you can't underestimate how that can help you, especially with confidence. I mean, if you come across 4 questions that you didn't know how to do, that might stress you out, but it won't if that's then explained to you. So, yeah, I just think that making sure that you're not being too pessimistic and that you're trying to refocus yourself, but also reiterating that exams aren't the be-all and end-all, so it's not going to end your life if you don't do very well, and will actually allow you to do better. So that's the best thing that my parents did for me, was just reiterating that it doesn't really matter.
I think in Dane Quan, I think in any select school, it speaks to what we were saying at the beginning before the recording started, so it won't make any sense to anyone else. It is a high-pressure environment, and we do quite a lot to mitigate that, but unfortunately, these students are well aware that they have you have expectations of yourself, regardless of what we do, and I think you're right. I think, actually, it's worthwhile us putting on the record that's the same for all of us. You know, exams, we push you more because we think it's an act of love. We feel like having good exam results will set you in good stead, but you're completely right. When it boils down to it, all of these things are subsidiary to happiness and joy and, you know, being a young person, you know. So I suppose, sorry, if you'd like to add something.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I found with exams, I found that weirdly, kind of once I got into the room, I was sort of okay, I didn't get very stressed in the exam. But I think the way that I did that was basically, I just sort of let go of all the kind of, this exam is important, but it's not that important, so I don't need to worry, but I do, you know, but I need to focus. I just sort of stopped thinking about it and just kind of put that, all that kind of idea to one side.
Did you enjoy the exam?
in some sort of weird, sort of nerdy way, yes.
Right.
I sort of quite liked doing questions. I mean, in a weird way, yes, but I mean, I wouldn't choose to do it of my own free will, I think.
Okay, all right. just a question.
But for what it was actually all right. You know.
Okay,
Megan, sorry.
Just circling back there, I just think, just to reiterate, that for me, personally, the amount of pressure I put on myself was already enough, so it was nice that school weren't sort of pushing that too as well. We had a couple of assemblies about mental health and prioritising happiness over exams. And to not have my parents sat there going, you need to get this, otherwise you're not going to get here, because I knew what grades I needed to get into sixth form. But not focusing on that actually allowed me to get them. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have been worse off had there been more pressure applied, because I was already very harsh on myself during the exam period.
And was it practically, so this is way off topic for maths, but I'm just interested in what you're saying. in a bid to alleviate some of that tension, was it that your parents went, right, we're not going to talk about it at all, or is it that we're going to talk about it but vouch it in, sort of couch it, excuse me, in positive terms, or is it distraction, let's go and do pitch and putt, let's go and watch a film or whatever? What worked for you, and what did your parents do?
A combination of distraction and also positivity. So they would come in, I did a lot of independent revision, but they would come in and ask me what I was up to, and I found that really helpful. Just, it seems really simple, but just asking and checking up, because it feels like they're still interested, and then yeah. If you do need them to help, but if as well, if you just want to crack on, then that's okay too.
Mm-hmm.
A distraction's important, so don't, I'm never the type of person to sit down for 5 hours and keep going.
It's not helpful.
No, it's not.
So breaking it up and doing things in between, maybe don't fall into the trap of putting something on TV and then you've binge-watched a season's worth of Netflix. Going for a walk maybe, just around the block. I did baking, quite a bit of baking. Mm-hmm. Became quite good at making bread, actually.
Great.
Stuff like that I do find quite helpful.
Find out what you love and do that.
And what did you guys love? You said exercise, yeah?
Yeah.
And baking, lovely. Yeah. You guys?
I'll say it wasn't so much like this, it wasn't trying to make the revision more enjoyable. When I say enjoyable, I mean engaging. So it's a lot easier to revise if it's engaging and you're not just clock watching. Because if you're just kind of, well, not reading through notes, but if you're doing something you don't enjoy, you're going to stare at something and feel like forever.
So remove the clocks.
Well, it's find activities better for you. So one for me, flashcards, they're far more engaging than like summarising notes.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it easier and much more bearable if you're not so much enjoying, but...
No, I get it. Is there anything else you guys would like to add? Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I've got one more thing. It's that, for me personally, because people use the structure, don't they, that the 10 minutes of doing something or the 20 minutes of doing something, breaking it up, I didn't necessarily find that helpful, because I'd find it would take me 5 minutes to get going, and then those 5 minutes were spent worrying about the fact that the time was about to end.
Right.
So just taking those away and doing as much as you can until you feel like you need to stop, and then taking a 5 minute break. So you limit the amount of break time you have, but you don't limit the amount of time you need to spend working.
So it feels more natural, more organic. Yeah. That is interesting.
Yeah. I'm organised by topic, not by time. So say I'm going to do something, do these questions, not say I'm going to do something for 20 minutes. Because say, all right, why 20 minutes? That's just meaningless.
Well, yeah, because you could that could be rearranging pencils, couldn't it? Yeah, of course, that makes sense. Interesting, because we've got a lot of different ideas. Hopefully there's something practical that's come out of this for you guys. Is there any questions you have for Miss Brissenden specifically about maths and about how your young person can be
helped? When do you stop teaching the curriculum?
We will finish. Some sets will be finished by February half term, and some others will be finished probably the week after half term.
Okay.
Further maths may still be going on slightly longer. Maybe. We'll see. It's how quickly the kids get this last lot as to how long the last bit takes. The last bit's quite chunky monkey topics, aren't they?
Vectors, etc. I can't really remember that.
Sorry, I asked a question earlier about the three exams.
Yes.
My mind's a bit more analytical on this one. Yep. So all I got back was non-calc, calc and calc.
Yep.
There's no other dissemination between those three papers.
It's just... The only thing that you can almost guarantee, is going to be on paper two or three is iteration, because you have to use a calculator for that. Otherwise, anything can be tested across any of the papers at any level. I need to do something with circles, so therefore I need to use pi, which is a calculator.
You can just give an answer in pi.
Give an answer in terms of pi. Yeah. So. What we can do after paper one is we can say, right, well, circle theorems has already come up, so it's unlikely to come up on paper two and three.
Is that a rule? A rule?
It's not a rule, though, is it?
No, circle theorems, I think, your eyes, it was, kind of came up on two of the papers.
Yeah.
So could you put a pencil through the RAG rating, just a very light pencil?
You could probably then start focusing on other things. So you might say, actually...
Are they not doing circle theorems?
Yeah, they are. Don't worry.
I would be very jealous if they weren't doing circle.
I'd say some topics, some of the more obscure topics, you could probably fairly comfortable. But circle theorems, they really like for some reason, so you probably couldn't.
And also... they will say, even if it was on a calculator paper or a non-calculator paper, they will say, show that this is this. And so they're expecting to see all your working. So it doesn't matter whether it's on a calculator paper or non-calculator. And if it would be lovely, like last couple of years ago when we were given the topics that were going to be covered, we could then tick off, well, they've been done, so now we're down to these topics. We don't have that. So it could be anything across any paper.
And finally, sorry, with Dan, I'm just coming up against this point at the moment that he, this is Daniel we're talking about, but he's saying he doesn't know the dates of his exams for the PPEs. Is that right, or are they available?
So they're not available. They know the week of it, so they know that there's this amount of lessons up until the exam week. Truthfully, honestly, myself and the exams officer working on this last period, we basically go to the HODs, they tell us what they would like. It's much freer in terms of time because we want to give that authenticity this time. I don't know whether you know, but for the last set of PPEs, they were restricted to an hour because we wanted to maximise curriculum time in classrooms, whereas this March set of PPEs, so for instance, English are doing 2 1¾-hour papers, which wouldn't be appropriate earlier on in the curriculum journey. So all of the HODs, including yourself, have now...
Hopefully.
Three,
So we'll do three whole papers in the PPEs. Three 1½-hour papers. I think it's really important that they know what that feels like.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways the mocks ended up feeling more difficult than the real thing because you had less unprepared and they were condensed into a shorter, you know, they were in 1 week and not spread over.
So you have 6 weeks. And then if it's like that.
Did you all find your grades went up compared to
Yeah, they kind of did.
Through the mocks, then my final mocks were the same as my final thing.
Which week is it
then? We commence on the 6th of March.
Okay.
2 weeks. It's 2 weeks.
It will be about 2 weeks. So weeks commencing the 6th of March. But they will have their PP timetable by the end of this week. We are just in the process of putting that together and making sure it all fits logistically. Because as you might imagine, with things like MFL and listening, they require completely different sort of logistics than say maths or English. So that's where we are currently. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Is there anything else? Any last things? Think now, forever hold your peace. Lovely. Thank you so much for joining us. I really hope you found these sessions useful. Please help yourself to biscuits. You know, pad your pockets on the way out, you guys as well. Thank you.